sweeter than my sweetie when I meet her in the morning.
The morning.
With the morning glory.
The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Joe Simpson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Triangle Yesteryear. On this program, you'll hear reminiscences of life in earlier times around North Carolina's Triangle area, and sometimes other parts of the state, written by local authors. On today's program, I'll continue reading excerpts from Snowbird Gravy and Dishpan Pie, Mountain People Recall, a collection of stories gathered by Patsy Moore Ginns. Resuming in Chapter 2, Home and Family Life. Apple Peel Pie. Apples was scarce one year, real scarce. My grandmother had a half bushel of apples. She canned the apples, and then she taken the peelings and canned those, washed 'em real clean and canned 'em. My mother said at the time, "I'll never eat those." But then, later on, she was down in the hayfield, and when she came in, my grandmother had baked two wonderful pies from those peelings, and my mother ate three pieces. They used so many things that we throw away. I remember grandmother peeled the potatoes real deep and planted the peelings. Raised our potatoes that way. Winnie Biggerstaff, born 1904, McDowell County. Snowbird Gravy. And, you know, back when we growed up, years ago, just kids and all, we'd catch snowbirds. You know what snowbirds is. And we'd clean 'em up. Put 'em in the pot and make gravy out of 'em. Oh, yeah. Makes as nice a pot of gravy as you've ever seen if you get enough of 'em. So we'd take a barn door. You know, just take a door off of a barn. Put a trigger under it and put a string to it. Just hide it in the barn. Then we'd put just all kinds of oats and stuff under there. And when 15 or 20 got under it, we'd jerk the string. Then we'd go get 'em and have enough to make a pot of gravy. So there was an old man stayed right close to us. His wife was about blind. Couldn't see. And he was a-getting some, too, you know. He caught a couple. Just got two and said to her, "Now you make some gravy for me out of these for breakfast." Well, had these old pot hooks, you know, across the bar that you'd hang the pots on. And then you'd put 'em in there in hot water, boil 'em, and make your gravy and all. So she couldn't see, and she went in to put the birds in the pot. And she pitched 'em over behind the back stick. And so she worked and kept a-boiling this water, and the birds over there behind the back stick. And, I don't know, me and Dad went down there for something that morning. We'd done got breakfast. Went down there a little late, and there they was eating breakfast. And the old man, he was a-dipping in there, and he said, "Mary, this snowbird gravy is awful weak. It's terrible weak. I just don't believe there's no snowbirds in it." She said, "Yeah, I put 'em in it." He said, "I just don't believe there's any in it. Honey, I just can't find any. Mary, I don't believe they're in it." She said, "I throwed 'em in it last night." He went back and looked, and they was in behind the back stick, back in there. That got him. He was eating his gravy off of snowbirds, and there wasn't any snowbirds in it. Well, now you have a backlog. That's to throw the heat out of the fireplace. Then you put your other fire here, you see, and she had throwed 'em behind that back log. See, it's a green one, bigger than the rest of 'em, about a 10 or 12 inch one. A snowbird, I'd say it'd be about an inch and a half through. There wasn't much to it, just the breast, but it was good. What it was real good. Then we'd take a stick and put 'em in. We'd kill 'em, we'd go out and kill 'em and dress 'em, and then take and put a stick in 'em, and take and hold 'em before the fireplace and put salt on 'em and broil 'em, pull 'em off and eat 'em. You just about had to survive on what you could get, you know. I can go out in the woods right now. I can take my rifle and my little old sing-hoe that I dig herbs and stuff with, and put me in the woods, and I can, no bread nor nothing, and I can live all through the summer without ever coming into the store for a bite of anything. Take me a fish hook, stuff like that. See, if you come to a groundhog hole or a ground squirrel that's went in the hole, you know you can't get it out. You just go get you a bucket. Get you some water and just start pouring water in the hole. Pour the water till the hole comes full and starts running out, and you get you a club and stand there. It's a coming out. You know it's a coming out. So just knock them in the head, dress them out, and there you go. And if you come to a rabbit hole and it won't come out, just go to pouring water in the hole. There's many ways to survive without just going out here and getting it easy. I've done a many a one that way. Just stand there with my stick, and when it pokes its head out, bust it. Get him for my meat, you know. Us boys, we'd go out and camp that way maybe for 2 weeks, just for the fun of it. Kill groundhogs and eat 'em. Kill rabbits and eat 'em. Stuff like that. Now, a groundhog, all that greasy part, you cut out and throw away. Just get the parts you want. Get them kernels out under the four legs. You've got kernels there, that big. And if you cook 'em, ain't nary dog can eat one. It'll stink and run you out of the house. Cut all them out. Cut these ribs off. Throw 'em away. Get all the fat off. Cook it about 2 hours, 2 to 3 hours. Then pour all this water off and put it in a pan after you get to the house and put it in the stove. Bake it. Just strip them big pieces off. Coon is the best meat I ever eat. That's better than groundhog. We used to possum hunt a lot. You could sell the hides for 25 cents apiece. Polecats, or skunks, they'd bring about 2.5. We'd trap 'em, catch 'em. That's the way we'd have to do to get a little bit of change. So Dad would possum hunt, bring 'em in, and he'd say, "Boys, let me have that one to fatten up." So he'd feed 'em milk and bread for about 2 or 3 weeks, and then kill 'em. And you talking about something to eat, son, they was good. They was tender and good. They was better than chicken. And the funniest thing happened. We was standing on the river over here. You know, bullfrog hams is good to eat. You can survive off of just about anything like that through the summer. So Dad went down to the river, and I went down there, and there was a big old bullfrog down there. I caught it, and it was an awful big one. Took it up there to him, and its hams was that long. He just took a stick of stove wood and knocked it in the head. Now, to catch him, I had just slipped up behind him and grabbed him. He was in the mud partly, you know. He kept a bellowing. You know, he'd go on like a cow bellowing or something. This was about dark. So he took it to the house and knocked it in the head, then cut its hams off, the legs, dressed 'em out and took 'em in the house. And then the next day, Mother was fixing 'em for him for breakfast. We didn't have nothing much to do that day, and the sun was getting up. It was getting up in the morning, I'd say about 7 o'clock. When we didn't have anything to do, we didn't get up too early. When we did, we'd get up at 4 o'clock. So Dad, he was sitting there eating these bullfrog hams, you know, said, "Boy, them is good." Well, the window was right at the table where you could look right out to where he'd throwed the old bullfrog. Well, that old bullfrog was out there. He hadn't killed him, you know. That thing was sitting there with his mouth going open and all. He just knocked him in the head. I said, "Dad, look at yonder." Mother said, "Oh, Lord, you're eating that frog's hams. Go out there and do something with him." And he said, "The dad burned thing? I'll get it after a while." Stanley Hicks, born 1911 in Watauga County. Jerk Coffee. One old man, now he was so stingy, this ain't no joke, it's a fact. He took coffee beans and he dried 'em in the stove, just about like you'd fix a peanut. Then he took a string and put a hole through several beans of the coffee, put the string through it, wouldn't let his wife bother it, called it jerk coffee. Then he'd hold the coffee pot lid up and hold these beans down in there on this string and let it stay so long. Then he'd jerk it out, hang it up, let it dry, and use it again. And that's what's called jerk coffee. I'd call it water. It ain't no joke. I'm a-telling you the truth. Then they got to where they'd save the grounds. They'd buy 'em, make their coffee, and then they'd take 'em out and put 'em on a board and let 'em dry. Then they'd go back and make it again, which it got very weak toward the last of it. And that's the way the thing went, just to tell you the truth. There was a lot of stuff then that people don't fool with now. Stanley Hicks. Sweet Hickory Salad. My grandpa said he took these here sweet hickories. I don't know if you know what they are or not, but took the leaves off of them early in the spring to make salad out of 'em. Sweet hickory. Got the leaves off of 'em just like you'd go and get salad out of your garden. Yep, they were grown trees. Eat 'em. Now, there was tough hickory, and there was sweet hickory. You can dig the roots out of it, and the roots taste sweet, but there don't many grow around this country. And they dig out artichoke. You know, now they've got that tame. But he said then they'd dig them out and eat them when he was young. They was wild. Stanley Hicks. Hard to get a nickel. We'd take our wheat to the roller mill, raise our wheat and take it to the roller mill and have it ground. And we eat that. And we growed our cane and made our lasses. And Mother would take and ball it up and make coffee out of it. Just keep a-cookin' it and stirrin' it until it just got to be in a ball. Then she'd make coffee out of it. Ground it up in a coffee mill. See, it would be hard like candy. It tasted pretty good. Then we parched corn and made coffee out of it. Parched wheat and made coffee out of it. Parched chestnuts. And take corn stalks, the pith out of 'em now. You know the pith in corn stalks? She'd burn it to make soda with it to put in the bread. And just burn it to ashes and then put it in your bread. Put it in a pan and put it in the stove and burn it. Then she crumbled it up and put it in bread and made soda out of it. And that would make the bread rise. If you bought soda, you could get it for a nickel a pack. But it was hard to get a nickel. Stanley Hicks. Using lye. Experience is the best thing of making hominy. Well, I make it with ashes and drip that lye. I use the lye, you know. Have a bucket with holes in the bottom and put a little straw in it so the ashes won't go through. Hang it up first. Then you'll pour the water and it'll run through, just as clear. Then you have your corn. Well, you heat your water to hot and don't pour too much of that lye in at one time. It'll eat it up, maybe. Sometimes it's stronger. I've never heard of anybody getting sick off of the lye. Some use devil's lye, but that'll eat you up. When it goes to boiling, don't you think it's going to be enough? You put more of that lye in. Then you take a spoon and lift up some grains and see if that husk is going to come off. Just mash it with your finger. Now don't use too large of grains. The little grains skins better and cooks easier. And then you wash that husk off good, and you put it back and cook it till it gets done. Why, it takes hours to cook it. I made some last winter. Nanny Smith, born 1888, Clay County. Dishpan pie. You know, we didn't have no cans to can nothing in. We drained our blackberries. And in the winter, we'd take those dried blackberries and make 'em into a pie, just the same as if they were fresh. Put 'em in a pan, put some water in it, and let 'em go to boiling. Then put your bread in, your dough. And that was good. And peaches. Peaches was the finest things dried, you know. People enjoyed eating then more than they do now. Oh, my goodness, I guess they did. They worked harder, and they enjoyed their food more. I'd bake dried apple pies, tarts, fried apple pies. In some things, I believe the big old iron pots give the food, some of it anyway, a better flavor. Now, where they boiled cabbage, you know, put a big bone of meat in and boil cabbage, now that was really good. We had cornbread with it. And soup beans. I used to have a half a bushel of soup beans. Those were the white beans you grow, and the hulls were tough, and you shelled 'em. People would make great big old potfuls of stews, soups. And when I had my children at home, you know, I'd make a pie in a dishpan. One of the smaller dishpans, you see. Crust on the bottom and a crust on the top. Now that I baked in the oven, after we had an oven. Iowa Patterson, born 1881, in Clay County. A Bachelor's Life. Now I do all my own canning. Hot water bath. Don't pressure cook 'em. Too hot, too fast. And it'll kill 'em. Ain't no use nobody arguing with me that it don't. Canned 55 half gallons of them beans last year. Didn't get much corn. Coons got my corn last year. I can anything anybody else does. When I've got it, that's what I can. Can turnips. Ain't but one thing I season. When I open a can of beans, I put my meat in with my beans. If you ain't got it, and you can't buy it, you don't do it. I used to hunt squirrel, rabbit, possum hunt, coon hunt, and all that. Them days is all gone. You can't hunt nothing up here but a dang deer and a coon. Don't care a thing about deer. You could bring one up here, dress it out, and I wouldn't take it in the house if you give it to me. That's the nearest nothing I ever tried to eat. And turkey is the next. Now, chicken you can go out here and buy. It has the flavor of chicken. Now, I got one of 'em the other day that tasted like chicken. When I got it fixed right, it tasted like chicken we used to have. I make dumplings with them, if you know what that is. That's the way I fix them. Ain't nothing hard to do if you just don't look at it like that. Can't get no cornmeal no more. Ain't nowhere you can get it ground. You buy it, and it ain't meal. It's flour. They don't know where to stop a making meal out of it. They make flour. I make buckwheat bread altogether. Ain't never been married. Getting along fine by myself. Oh, yeah. Ain't never been to the doctor but one time in my life. Constipated. That was the only thing that was the matter with me. Course, I had the mumps, measles, right here. Got over 'em. I was a boy. Drunk sweet milk one time. Got sick. I quit right there. Don't drink it no more. I do not. I drink buttermilk if I know who makes it. I'm just a little bit queer about my eating. Don't have nobody to complain to but myself. I don't complain much, and nobody who ever eat here ever complained. I've just always been a hard worker. Don't worry about a thing. Never did. Nothing ever worries me. What use is it to worry? What good does it do? If it's going to happen, let it go. Tom Pruitt, born 1904, Allegheny County. 500 fruit jars. And if we didn't have two hogs that would dress 500 pounds apiece, why, we didn't have no meat. My daddy would say, "We ain't got no meat. What are we going to do?" It wasn't like it is this day and time. You have hogs' dresses to about 150 or 200 pounds. But back then, they wanted them dressed 500 pounds. Salt cured it and canned a lot of meat. And then, if you killed a beef, why, that was usually all canned up. Well, there were 6 of us boys in my family, and if you didn't have 500 half-a-gallon fruit jars full, you didn't have nothing much to eat. Take a half-a-gallon of cherries or blackberries. It didn't go far with 6 boys eating out of it. Ralph Krauss, 1922, Allegheny County. Souse meat and liver mush. Now, when they killed the hogs, they used all the parts of the hog, all of them. Out of the head, they made head souse, which was cooked, and you'd put vinegar over it and let it set for several days. Just ground the head meat up and put pepper and salt and vinegar in it. Course, they took the bones out and cooked it real tender before they mashed or ground it up. I can remember my mother-in-law mashing it with her hands. They didn't have a grinder at the time. And they made sausage from the scraps. And, of course, they cured the shoulders and the hams and the side meat. Back then it was cured with white salt. We didn't know what this Morton's salt was at the time. Then, after about 4 or 5 days, we'd go back and salt the bones again, around the edges of the bones. And after 12 or 15 days, then you could hang the meat up. Finest thing in the world, I guess. We made liver mush from the liver. You know, we buy it in the store now, and it isn't fitting to eat. Always, when I made it, I cooked the onions and everything with it, salt, pepper, and onions. And then we'd make it out in cakes so we could slice it. It sure tasted different from what we get now. Winnie Biggerstaff, born 1904, McDowell County. The Lesson. These students, they come up here and wanted to kill a hog, you see. And so I told them to go buy it. So there were 7 of them. 7 of them went in and bought a shoat. I guess it weighed about, I'd say, 150 pounds. Dressed out about 100. And they brought it over here. Ha! So I built up the fire and got the water and everything hot. And I said, "Well, there it is." And they said, "Who's it going to shoot it?" I said, "There's the rifle." "No, you shoot it. We'll make it squeal." I said, "Well, I've made them squeal, too." They said, "You shoot it." So I shot it. They said, "Well, what do we do now?" I said, "You stick it." And they said, "Stick it with what?" I said, "Cut its throat. It's a gonna die, so cut its throat so it'll bleed." They said, "You do that." So I took my knife and cut its throat, and then scalded it. And I've got a bell scraper, so I told them to go ahead and scrape it. And they said, "We don't know how." And I said, "Well, you won't learn no younger." And they messed with that hog. Finally, at last, I just got tickled so good I just couldn't live. I'd have to turn my back or something, or I'd tell them I have to go in the house, and I'd go and laugh as long as I wanted to, and I'd come back. You know it hurts anybody when they're training if you laugh, so I didn't want to do that at all. And they said, "Hicks, for gosh sakes, help!" Some of the rest of them, the kids, was just dying of laughing, just laughing like crazy. So I got in there, and in about 30 minutes I had the thing scraped. I mean, cleaned down and ready. And they said, "Now what are we going to do?" I said, "Put the gabbro stick in." "What is a gabbro stick?" "The thing you hang it up with. Hang it up in the cherry tree." So I split the leaders and hung it up. And I said, "Boys, get her innards out." "Gosh sakes," they said, "we ain't going to try that." So I took its innards out, you know. Cut its head off. Put them all in a tub. They was a-standing there looking at it. One of them kept spitting. You know, all that blood. Spitting. I said, "Boy, that's a-looking pretty good, ain't it?" Directly, he went out through yonder holler. And I said, "Boy, you won't make no hog killer, will you?" Well, I cut it down the back, and I said, "Boys, I'm through with it. You can take it and cut it up any way you want now." And they said, "How are we going to cut it?" I said, "Well, just take it the way it is." I was done wore out with it then. Now, they was going to butcher it themselves. And I told them, they was all just about grown, you know. I said, "Do anything else that has to be done. If you have to go out here and grub a tree, grub it. If you have to cut one down, cut it. If you have to dig up a half acre of ground, dig it up. If you have to lay a pipe from here to the barn, go out and do it. If you have to build a house or a barn, build it. If you have to go out here and build you a mill, do it." "Gosh almighty, Hicks," they said, "you've told us enough to do. If we lived to be 100, we'd never do it." "Well," I said, "that's what I've done." Stanley Hicks, 1911, Watauga County. Dried food. Dad, when he'd killed a beef, we'd dry it. He had a smokehouse. He'd hang it up, keep a smoke in it, and dry it. And then he had another one that he built that we dried all our vegetables in. We dried all our apples in it, dried our beans in it, dried our pumpkins in it, had shelves in it, and then had a furnace under it. Built a fire under it, and when the first shelf got dry, we'd change it, take it out and put it on the top. Take the top one out and put it down there. Dried maybe 100 pounds a week of pumpkin. Dried berries, blackberries, huckleberries, you know. Then Mother put them in a sack and hung them up. Put the pumpkin in a sack and hung it up. Put the, what we call, leather breeches, these string beans, we'd string them up and hang them behind the stove. We used hickory wood and corn cobs to dry the beef. See, we had soaked it in salty water maybe 2 days before we cured it. Take and pour it over it, then turn it, then wipe it off. Lay it on a shelf on a white cloth to dry. Just cut the beef up and hang it up by the wires. Put the fire under it. Then the smoke cured it. Didn't have no floor in the smokehouse. Just put a fire under it and smoked it. When we got it smoked, we'd take what you make sheets out of, and we'd just sew that around there real tight. And that was it. And then when we wanted some, we'd just go and take her down. Just strip her down and get what you wanted of it. Now you could eat it just like it was, or cook it, either one. We'd just eat it dry. We called it jerky. We had a knife that we could use to cut it as thick as we wanted to. We didn't have to cook it. I mean, we young'uns would cut us off a piece of that jerky and put it in our pockets and go to cut hay. And we'd take our knife and cut us off some to eat. Boy, it was good. It was salty. Ready to go. See, we run out tree sugar. Tap a tree. Bore a hole in a tree with a bit. Then drive an elder spout in there for the water to run out. Catch it in a trough. Carry it in and make tree sugar out of it. Boil it down, you know. Then take the tree sugar and put it in these here biscuits. Take several of them, about a dozen of them, you know. Put it in there, and when it dried, then take it and walk across the mountain to Elk Park and sell it for 25 cents a cake. You know, get a little money. Stanley Hicks. A step stove. My mother wove a lot of clothes. She did all her darning and knitting, knitted most of our socks and all of that stuff. She was a very working woman. She never, seemed like, was ever still. Most of the time we got up between 4 and 5 o'clock in them days. Got up early. Of course, most people went to bed early in them days, too. It was all oil lamps, you know. I remember the first stove we ever had in the place. Mother cooked on the fire, but we finally got a small stove, wood stove. I think it was what we called a step stove in that day. Had 2 different tops on it, separated. Had 2 burners down here and 2 up here. and that was the first stove my mother ever had to cook on. Add McMillan, born 1889, Allegheny County. Barefoot in summer. We bought the children's shoes then, just like we do now, one pair a year then. And they went barefoot all summer, but their feet would get so tough going barefooted that they couldn't tell the difference in the summer. Iowa Patterson, 1881, Clay County. Black bonnets. On Doe Hill, there was what they called the bonnet split mine. My grandmother wore bonnets, and they made the bonnets stand up with the splits of mica. They had little slits on the back side where they'd slip the splits in. My grandfather taken me there when I was just 6 years old, but I couldn't find it now. He would always go there to get the mica for her bonnets. She wore the calico bonnets and the black bonnets. My mother, until she died, kept one of the black bonnets. See, the older ones wore the black bonnets on Sunday, and the younger ones wore the calico with the different colored flowers and things. They also wore long skirts with ruffles on them. My grandmother always wore a white apron with a ruffle on it, too. When I was baptized, I was 1 year old, and my grandmother wore a long dress with ruffles on it and a white apron. My mother has told me that many a time. I was 75 the 16th of May, 1979, and I made all my children's clothes, every one of them. My first four were girls, and I made all their clothes. I've raised 12 children, and I've only lost one 38-year-old son. 12 children. Doctors used to have an awful lot of trouble getting to the homes in the winter time. One of my daughters had bronchial pneumonia before there was anything to take care of that. That was before sulfur. Our old home doctor, Dr. Sloop, from up here at Crossnor, made 13 trips and walked a mile from the top of the mountain down under the mountain to see her. We were a mile down on Brush Creek. He made 13 trips to see her. She was 4 years old then. But she's strong and well now, lives in South Carolina, and has her first grandchild, my great-grandchild. I've just got 10, and 26 grandchildren. I think that's what makes you young, caring for children. It's the wonderfulest thing in the world. Back then, I did most of my sewing at night after I put my children to bed. Quilting, things like that. But we told stories to the children. We enjoyed the children at night around the fireplace more than anything else in the world. And they could sit still and listen then. They can't do that today. Winnie Biggerstaff, 1904, McDowell County. We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Yesteryear. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Joe Simpson for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Triangle Yesteryear is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening.